That was a performance from last year's Champaign-Urbana Folk and Roots Festival last September, featuring Liz Carroll with Jim DeWan, the Ronan Boys, and Ralph's 235, the name of those tunes, heard on Live and Local on FM 90.9. And that's by way of introduction to a local premiere that is happening this week at the Independent Media Center in Urbana. It's called Aquatown, A Future Hydro History. And the name on its own sort of begs a whole bunch of questions. And I have to confess that I was looking in our library to see if we happen to have the soundtrack for Urinetown, the musical. I thought that might be at least an amusing lead-in, but we don't. So we didn't get to hear any of that music. My guests on this portion of the show to talk about Aquatown and share some excerpts from it are Ash Devine, who was a singer and songwriter who was with us a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Ash, I think you were doing some, you've been here for a while now, preparing for this piece, but also doing some other performances. And also the director of Aquatown, Andrea Del Moro. Is that how you say her name?
Del Moral,
thank you very much. And a person I've been wanting to meet for a long time because of the instrument that he is holding in his right hand. It is called the Utterbot, and his name is Jacob Barton. Mm-hmm. And he's also the music director for this show.
Glad to be here.
And Andrew Heathwaite.
Right.
Have I said that right?
Yes.
And you're a performer in the show, including and a musician as well. So there's a mix of music and acting and singing, and I don't know what else. We'll find out. So thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
And you're holding a dulcimer.
Yes.
On your lap there. And Andrea is the only one not holding a musical instrument.
Just my mouth.
Just your mouth. Well, since you brought your mouth with you and you are the director, why don't you tell us a little bit about of the background behind Aquatown, A Future Hydro History.
Sure. Well, this show is one in a series, an ongoing series of performances that I've made with other people about water issues in various ways and in various places. And so Aquatown specifically explores likely possible futures around water resources in Urbana-Champaign. We looked at future climate projections and then looked at, well, what might happen here? What might change in relation to water? And we also investigated what already happens here in terms of managing water. And I'm really curious about what that means for how people interact and what kind of resource access people have and what the quality of the local ecosystem is. So we looked at three different divergent possible futures that could come from fairly realistic forecasts for climate change, resource availability, political and economic change in the next couple decades.
What's your background that led you to even be thinking about this?
Let's see. Well, for a long time, I think since childhood, I've known about ecological issues just from my upbringing. And I grew up in the Pacific Northwest in a family that really cares about the natural surroundings that we were living in, and kind of everyone in my family is involved with ecological issues in some way for their work. And then about 10 years ago, I moved to the Bay Area, and some of the people I met there right away, or actually right before I moved there I met, were doing innovations in low-tech water technologies. They had just started a group called the Greywater Gorillas, and they...
And that's G-U-E-R-R?
Exactly,
Guerrilla,
yeah. And they've been very influential and successful in proliferating knowledge and material presence of recycling household water in California to the extent that I think they played a pretty significant role in changing household scale gray water code just last June in the state of California, making it accessible and legal for people to put in small scale systems, which means across the state people are conserving a lot more water, which is one critical factor to having a sustainable water culture.
And then how did you end up in Champaign-Urbana?
Well, one of my longtime performance collaborators, Kylo Mattson, graduated from the dance program here in 2002 at U of I and moved to the Bay Area. We met out there, and we started just creating, improvising, composing performances together. And we shared a real interest, both of us, in water. So our first piece actually was about gray water. It was a dance piece. And then we came back here beginning in 2004, I think. Yeah, because Kylo had some, still had relationships with performers here and with School for Designing a Society. And so we came back and made work with Jeff Glassman and Lisa Fay, or basically offered ourselves to their composition projects. And throughout coming here every year or two, I've met a lot more people around. I met Jacob and Andrew, and I met Ash through people here, although we didn't meet here. And that brought me back.
And you probably said in the course of answering the question, and maybe I just spaced for a second, but what's your own performance background?
I didn't say.
Okay. I'm glad. I'm always afraid that I just tuned out for a second missed it.
I did a lot of theater in my childhood and up through high school. I started directing in high school, and then I also started dance training in high school. And then I went different ways into political activism and just liberal arts education and creative writing. And then when I moved back to the Bay Area about 10 years ago, I started doing training in dance in the it's a very vibrant contemporary dance community. So I started doing that, and I also did a lot of improv theater along the way. And the things have just sort of, you know, I've wandered through performing dance a lot with Change of State Performance Project with Kylo, and we started making more theater along the way, and I just found my way back to directing and thinking of the shape of a project. It allows me to bring in my writing and also movement background and create theater that's between the genres more than what opportunities were out there for me before. And in the last year or so, I've also convened a theater research lab, so we've been exploring more processes around physically based theater together.
And this is all centering on Champaign-Urbana at this point?
Right now, yes. Yeah. I'm often out there in the California. Bay Area, in California.
Yeah. And since you mentioned it, the Change of State Performance Project, what is that?
So that's a platform for artists to create performances collaboratively, generally that deal with social engagement, social issues, environmental issues, and that we're working in ways that are usually different in terms of genre and process than just like a really classic division of the performing arts. So in this case, we've had a music composition process that had its own origin spot, and a theater process that had its own interests and criteria, and then we're trying to weave them together to make something that's not just one serving the other. So there's different ways of trying to support each other as artists in our own work, yet working in a collaborative, larger project.
So is Change of State you and Kylo and friends?
Kylo,
part of something else?
Kylo and I founded it. Kylo's not involved with it at the moment. Elizabeth Simpson in town is also pulled in. It's not a really clearly defined membership at this point. It's a lot of somewhat informal and gaining more structure.
And what are past projects that you've done?
As Change of State or before
Change? As Change of State.
We created a play between 2007 and 2009 called Take This House and Float It Away. And that was about a suburban couple in Sacramento in the middle of a big winter storm that turned into catastrophic floods. They were sure that they were just fine where they were. So that's a physical tragicomedy, we called it. And we actually toured that through the upper Midwest right after, the year after the floods in 08. So we did that last spring, Jacob, too. It was a water-based tour. All the pieces were around water in some way, including that Utterbacht. And we also have conversations with the audience, usually after the shows, to be like, what did we stir up, and what's relevant to where you are right here, right now?
Yeah, I would imagine so. You'd really have to, as I said at the outset, just giving the name of this particular project, Aquatown of Future Hydro History, there's lots of questions that the name on its own brings up, and I would think that if it's a successful show, you're going to stir lots of things, anybody who's going to see it.
Yeah.
And this is, I don't know if we said, this is going to be a premiere of the piece this week, starting... Where's my piece of paper? Starting Thursday.
Yeah, Thursday.
And running through Sunday. Do we want to give a little more background before we hear something from the show, or can we just launch into?
We can launch. Yeah.
And does whatever? Are we going to do a scene or a song, or what are we doing?
Well, I could start with what's sort of the theme of the show, as I've made it. It's a melody on the Utterbot, so I could play that.
All right. First, explain the Utterbot.
Well, the Utterbot was invented in 2005 collaboratively. I didn't think of the glove. It's a bottle, and you take the bottom out of the bottle.
It looks like a beer bottle or a
yeah
something like that.
Usually. That's the best, most reliable model.
And because
beer
you get to have drunk the beer, too, before you empty it.
Right? I have never emptied the contents of a beer bottle. I always just find them on the street
okay.
or in the recycle bin. And then you need a cleaning glove, and you need a hose clamp. And somehow all of these elements magically combine. And then you fill it with water, and you have a water reservoir that's the glove. So you've got your lowest note, and then you squeeze the water up. And you've got a whole range of glissando beer bottle playing.
So you've actually taken the bottom out of the bottle.
Yes.
I'm guessing.
That's the trickiest part.
And then the glove is attached to the bottom with the hose clamp.
Exactly.
And otherwise you play it as anybody else would play a bottle, except you've got this glove to squeeze.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I interrupted in order to explain this thing you're going to make sound on.
Well, I can play sort of the theme from the show and just say that the theme is varied over the course of the show to reflect the changes that happen as the timelines diverge from 2020 on to 2053. So I'm trying to show like a musical culture gradually changing. But this is just the first moment of it.
That's even though just your quick initial demo of that instrument, that's not the sound I expected to come from. It's ethereal and beautiful, and I could just imagine it as the opening over the opening credits of a film of some kind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's sort of how it's used here. It's I've worked a lot to get pitch accuracy in the higher register, and I've been practicing it since 2005. It's sort of my primary instrument now.
As opposed to what other instruments?
Bassoon and piano and clarinet.
And, you know, it's pretty common in musicals for people in wind players in the pit to double.
Yes. There's a lot of that going on in the show.
Yeah. But I bet there's not too many shows that call for the Utterbot, so you're going to have to start writing for different kinds of doublers.
But everyone is welcome to write for the Utterbot. There's an Utterbot website, utterbot.wikispaces.com.
Is this your website?
It's a collaborative website, so people can add things to it on their own. There's Utterbots out there that I don't know about because people have made them, but I want people to share photos and stories and things because I know I'm not the only one.
And that is spelled Udder, UDDERBOT.
That's right.
That sounds great. So you talked about the three divergent possible histories or possible futures
mm-hmm.
that water, you know, that could affect water or lack thereof or disturbance thereof. This is not, I assume, something like, what is it, The Mystery of Edwin Drood, where the audience can choose a history, you know, which future
someday.
They want.
I do want to do that someday.
So is there an optimistic future projection and pessimistic and somewhere in between, or what is the outlook projected here?
They're all complicated. All the futures have their shadows. Some of them look more archetypally foreboding, And some of them look more like, oh, that's the sustainability for the future that everyone wants to be green and carbon neutral. And then another one looks at, what if there was a political role reversal between the U.S. and the international community? What would it look like if we were being limited and told what to do? So they all have their strengths and their weaknesses.
And is this show entertaining?
This is a hilarious group of people, actually.
Because, you know, the context so far sounds like it could just be
It's not
heavy.
Dry.
It's not dry.
Uh-huh.
Oh, man.
Okay. It's too easy.
Yeah, but so is, there is a sense of humor in this show?
Yeah.
At least now and then.
Quite a lot of comedy, I would say.
Quite a lot of comedy. And what's the nature of the comedy? Do we have an example of that, or what?
Is that a call for a scene?
That could be a call for a scene. I know you brought at least one.
Yeah. Do you guys want to do the one we were talking about?
Sure. So a lot of... Yeah. Everything that came out, most of what came out of the show was created by improvisations. So the scene was created by improvisations with the, led by Andrea, but carried out by the actors.
And does this need an introduction beyond what we've given or not?
Do you want to do that?
Well, we could say that this is part of the, what we're calling Future One track, the first feature where the UN has come in after a water crisis in the U.S. and our own government has lost control. And so at this point, there are two characters who've come in from India and Canada to help out the U.S., and they're doing an info session in someone's house.
As part of a mandatory public education and public re-education program to school people on proper water culture.
So this is from a scene from Aquatown, A Future Hydro History, which will have its world premiere this Thursday, and then continue through Sunday at the Independent Media Center in Urbana.
Oh, hello, guys. Welcome to my house. There are some prune danishes over there. Roger made them.
Oh, thank you. I'll have some later.
Thanks. Did you grow those prunes?
Yes. There are a few trees on the block.
Oh, that's great.
Okay, let's begin. Historically speaking, you Americans have a system of pipes that brings water from deep down in the earth.
Excuse me, I can't understand you over your accent.
Okay, very good. So you have a system of pipes that brings water from deep down in the earth, and pipes that take it away all the way to the Gulf of Mexico.
Yes, and it takes a lot of energy to do that. More energy than is rightfully yours to use.
Oh yeah, how many years did the system work? I understand it did it for a long time.
Yes, but it was at the expense of the past and the future. See, that water started as rain and took literally thousands of years to seep down through layers of rock and soil before becoming the aquifer.
Oh yeah, the Mahomet Aquifer. Heard of that? It's our underground lake.
No, not at all. You people think it's a lake, and you suck it up as if it got replenished every year with snowmelt. But it doesn't. Less than 1% of rain and snow gets down there, and it takes over 1,000 years to do so.
Yes, and you've been putting medicine, paint thinner, trash, all kinds of nasty things into the water. But think about it. All of that goes into the Salt Fork River, through Illinois, and into the Mississippi, and eventually ends up in the ocean. That can only work for so long.
The system worked because people paid their bills. They weren't greedy all the time.
That's right. And then they blew up all the mountains and burned all the coal, drained all the wetlands, and now there's nothing left.
That's bull. Don't believe her.
When we look at how people used indoor plumbing, we see that with unlimited access, none of us has very good discretion now, do we? If we still had it, you might keep using too much.
Who's the we, lady? I don't want no part of your we.
Well, actually, none of us in that room are that we. It was our ancestors, your grandparents, your parents. Although you, sir, you were probably alive back then yourself. I'm sure you know all too well what I'm talking about.
That's not true. People used what they paid
for. Excuse me.
Till the drought.
You know, the real trouble started 2 years ago in 2020.
Excuse me, hello?
That's when they turned the system off, and then people came in to make
exactly.
Big changes.
Hello?
Big changes.
This isn't helpful.
Okay, please simmer down, everyone.
If you don't pay attention, we can't help you.
I still can't understand you.
So, Ash, it sounds like your main character in that little scene is the heavy in this particular scene. Do you have a name in there?
My name's Kelly.
She's from Canada.
Of course. So, there sounds like there's a risk of PC people who are always hunting for PC things to complain about in both directions in this show. And, you know, like the person who says, I can't understand you because I'm a dumb American and I can't get past your accent. And then there's the other, you know, where it's, somebody could say, oh, well, this is such a PC show because there's your Kelly character who's just giving us all the green stuff. Are you making an effort? Have you made an effort in the show to try to balance one side or another? Or, I mean, it seems like it could end up being a preachy show. Is that what, is it meant to preach?
No.
Or what?
I think that generally what happens, and you guys feel free to chime in, is that there is some content of, you know, we're drawing from real life in the way that it's true that there are lots of people, lots of groups of people outside of the mainstream paradigm of the U.S. who would say these things that Kelly and Andrew's character there, Umesh, would say. And then we also show the responses that a lot of people would have. The same thing happens in another scene with kids where Kelly is actually teaching kids, and their responses too are like really confused and jolted. And I think that's a very human, common response, that people are resistant to ideas that aren't part of their habit already. And that's the main thing there. We're not pointing at like the people who are resistant as being stupid or wrong as much as this is a piece of theater showing human interaction.
This is what's going on. This is what actually does happen.
I think a characteristic of that particular future is partly that it's coming from on high and it's people are being talked down to. And so they're responding as one would when they're talked down to. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the sort of hidden impressions of this particular future, that these people who are coming in are kind of insulting the other people who are there. And so it's not a happy scene.
Well, that's always a difficult balance to actually create in real life, which is how do you tell people what to do or at least be helpful, as Kelly's character said, in a way that actually gets them to cooperate and do something that is really only helping themselves. What's the role of music in this show? I mean, three of you have brought instruments. We've heard one of them so far.
Well, it's interesting that the three actors are also musicians, and we have a group of four musicians, including myself and Denny Genovese from Florida, and Andy Burton, who's a local percussionist, and also Jason Finkelman on electronics. So we're kind of doing our own thing. The two songs that we might hear now are things that the actors have written, kind of performing as characters in the scenery. And the rest of the music kind of serves an underlying function of setting the environment more than being the content, I guess.
They're really like incidental music in a play. And it might have been played and done for Shakespeare's music or so on.
Sure.
So what's going to happen here?
Well, we could jump into a song that I wrote just recently. There was a placeholder for it, and I just got a song into it, so it's fresh, hot off the press, I guess. This is another part of Future One, and the scene is that people are waiting in line at the well. All the water is being rationed, and in order to get the water, you have to make sure your paperwork is all filled out and all this, and so you don't have control over your own ability to drink. So it's a blues song. Andrea asked us to compose blueses for that. And I'm going to play on this microtonal dulcimer. We could mention that a lot of the music is microtonal in this work, so in tuning systems that are not available on ordinary instruments. So this dulcimer here I've modified with frets to a different tuning system.
Okay, and this is some music from Aquatown of Future Hydro History here on Live and Local.
My clothes are on the line in the summer sun. I'm calling on the H2O to cluster up and fill my cup. Yeah, there's water in the ground, but it's always rationed. So I sing, it's gotta be my turn pretty soon. At the well, at the well. I'm calling for the rain, but I wait in line. A cloud in the sky would be a friend of mine. Yeah, there's water in the ground, but it's always rationed. So I sing, it's gotta be my turn pretty soon. At the well, at the well. You never can tell, you never can tell, you never can tell till you get to the well.
Music from Aquatown of Future Hydro History. You know, I jokingly said that although I was serious about wanting to have played an excerpt from Urinetown at the beginning of the show, and that could almost have been a song from there. For those of you who don't know the show, it's a horrible title, and I didn't want to see the show initially. But it's actually an incredibly funny show. But, you know, water is rationed. Actually, in this case, you know, you can't find a bathroom without paying for it, and so on. But that is an aside. The music is written, again, sort of by consensus, by improv?
So the group of four musicians was improvising to make music with the actors' scenes. And then there's a few songs that feature the musicians as solo singers.
How many actors altogether?
Three.
It's the three of you who are here.
Well, there's...
No, I'm standing in for Astarte Howell. She's the third actor.
Okay. And so
is Jacob, actually. Neither of them perform, except Jacob has one cameo. But so there's three, us two, Ash and I, and then another person, Astarte Howell.
Okay, and then the musicians, and then the director in the background. Well, we have, as always, the time passes quickly here. We have just a few minutes, and we certainly need to get Ash involved since you brought your... Do you say ukulele or do you say ukulele?
I say ukulele.
Okay. Just curious.
Ukulele.
Ukulele with many diphthongs. Yeah. I guess we'll have another.
For short.
Or uke. We'll have another musical excerpt from the show. Is this you solo?
Okay, so this song is actually backed up by the band in the actual show, but I'm going to play ukulele with it, and it's titled Blues at the Well.
So this is the other blues.
Yeah, this is the other blues. We all got blues at the well. You can never tell what you're gonna see till you get to the well. No, you can never tell how the wind might blow till the storm's right up above. Oh, my parents didn't know. Maybe they didn't care. Now we're learning the hard way to share. Oh, you could never tell till you get to the well.
A short blues. Well, that's good because we have another segment coming up that's about 20 minutes long from... a group called J108 of vocal jazz, and our feature for this portion of Live and Local has been about the world premiere of Aquatown of Future Hydro History. I'm afraid we've just had the been able to touch on it in the barest little bit and give sort of an idea of what it's going to be about.
And you can check out changeofstate.org for more information.
And that is the kind of the Change of State Performance Project that's created this. The premiere is actually Thursday, and performances continue through Sunday at the Independent Media Center in Urbana, which is in the old post office building in downtown on South Broadway. Performances Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 8, and Sunday evening at 7 o'clock. It's not very expensive, and I noticed that there's a $2 discount for seniors and anybody arriving not by car. And I saw you all ride up to the station in your on your bicycles. And I'm crossing my fingers, because we can't see out the window, that you'll arrive safely where you're going dry.
And the Thursday night show is free.
Oh, the Thursday night show is free. Good. That didn't say here. That's here. So thanks for adding that. Changeofstate.org will give you more information. So will the Independent Media Center website. And my thanks to Andrea Del Moral, Ash Devine, Andrew Heathwaite, and Jacob Barton for coming in and giving us a preview of
Kevin.
Aquatown.
Thanks, pleasure. Kevin.
It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. Our show is made possible in part by the Music Shop and Pro Sound Center, now located at 27 East Market View Drive in Market View Plaza, Champaign. The Music Shop offers private lessons on all instruments through Champaign School of Music, located on the premises. They also provide a complete band and orchestra instrument repair and service department. Stay tuned for J108 Vocal Jazz.